Yeah, it's not cheap anymore.
Not cheap anymore.
And now, thanks
to Monsanto, they're trying to get control over the food supply.
Yeah. How do either of you, or can you explain? I can't explain it, but people seem to just accept the fact that the water utilities aren't any good. No longer is the water safe. They got to go buy bottled water, and then they continue along. Whether or not they have to buy bottled water or not, we don't know.
Well, I'm going to let Grant answer that one because I've been out here on my own well for 30 years. I don't buy bottled water, and I don't have to worry about fluoride.
Yeah, I think people are basically conditioned the same as with ufology. You figure, like, why don't people stand up and sort of fight back about, free, what appears to be free energy or all this sort of stuff, is that people are so busy in their daily lives just taking their kids to soccer and going to work and stuff like that and, watching TV, that they basically haven't got time to take up any issues. They're just basically in survival mode. And there's only a couple of people who are actually sort of thinking about the whole thing, and it's very easy to direct people down whatever road you want to direct them down.
That's true. And Grant, you're getting into my boogaboo right now because of journalism and the news media. This is where I come from. And that's why people, I don't think they're truly apathetic. They're just tied up, like you say, trying to live a life, take care of their family and their work. That's why they turn on the TV. That's why they listen to radio, to find out from the journalist what's going on, and they're being shortchanged because there is no journalism anymore, only corporate advertising systems.
Yeah,
I agree about you on that a whole lot. I mean, it's just a PR machine.
Yeah, can I bring up a story, Jerry? Because this is a significant thing when we're talking about back engineering, and it was an interview you did, which I think was one of the best interviews in ufology in terms of back engineering. Because, again, we go back to John Alexander, who says, the government doesn't care, there's no back engineering. And when you come right down to it, it's pretty hard to sort of, prove or, show what factory's doing it and produce the documents and this sort of stuff. But there was one interview that you did, and this was with Ron Blackburn. Do you remember the interview 2005 at the Crash Saucer? And Ron Blackburn is significant because when John Alexander started his group, this Advanced Physics Theoretical Project, which people knew as the UFO Working Group, I got a hold of documents from this group, and I made this public in about 2005 that it wasn't the UFO Working Group, it was this Advanced Physics Group. And then John, when he came out his book, said, yeah, it was called the Advanced Physics Group, and the reason we called it that was so people couldn't FOIA it. And one of the people that he had brought onto this group, he called all these people, these top secret special access people, into this group. One of them was Ron Blackburn. And when you interviewed him in 2005, you said to him, what about back engineering? You're rumored to be the guy who's back engineering this stuff. And you know how Ron went, there's one thing I can talk about. And he talked about this, and it has never, to me, it's one of the most significant things that's ever been said. And it really hasn't gone anywhere. And that was where he said to you, actually, he's got the patent developed for stopping sonic booms on aircraft up to Mach 3 or 4. And where he got the technology was by watching a couple hundred UFO films. And he's with the Air Force Special Lab or whatever it is there, weapons lab. And he said he developed this technology where they sent out this beam of microwave energy to stop the sonic booms, and that this is what they use on jet aircraft, and it was developed from UFO technology by Ron Blackburn. And he basically says to you on video and says, yes, this is how it was developed. And then he also stated to you that he had developed a cloaking, that the UFOs were able to cloak themselves, and that he had developed a technology that the UFOs were using to cloak themselves. And this is out in the open. I mean, this is not something you got to really, dig and find. It's on video. It's still on the internet between you and him where he's doing this interview. And you see this whole thing where it's out in the open and still nobody pays attention to it. And then he talks about, remember at the end of the interview where he talks about the fact, he talks to this guy at Loveless Clinic in Albuquerque where the bodies are supposedly kept at a point. And he talks to this guy who's dealt with the bodies and this sort of stuff. And as he's leaving the room, he talks about this thing. He says, I hear, he throws this guy a bone. He says, I hear that the president and Congress may come up with a rule that will exempt everybody who has technology advice or, classified UFO technology. And the guy says to Ron, as he's saying, it's going to require a lot more than an order from the president.
to get this stuff out. And so I thought that was a significant interview that is out there, which basically says John Alexander is absolutely wrong, that one of John Alexander's people that he invited to his group is openly stating that technology that's used on jet aircraft today came from watching a couple hundred UFO films. Where he got the UFO films is another question, but it's out there in the open. There's no question about what Ron Blackburn said.
Ron Blackburn was just sitting there in the audience at a show we were doing in Las Vegas, and Bill Hamilton came up to me, and he's during a break, and he said, you need to get Blackburn on. He knows a lot more than you think he does. And that's how that interview came about. And as you know, Grant, I tried to get a hold of him later. He's kind of gone. I can't find him.
Yeah. Well, maybe after your interview, they made him quieten down. Because he was pretty open in that interview. I mean,
he was.
He wasn't beating around the bush. He basically said,
he was willing to talk. And I kicked myself many times. I appreciate what you said about the interview. But there were a lot of things I could have nailed him down on. I should have. But I was actually, like you, flabbergasted about what this guy was saying and his background and how he came to me represented. He obviously wasn't a flake, you know.
Yeah.
And I did check into him, but later before we played the interview, and he did have a military background and came highly recommended.
Yeah, and was on John Alexander's group, this UFO working group. He was one of the people on that group.
Right. Jim, I know you run across that in journalism over the years. You find a good source like that, and you let them go, or they get away somehow.
Well, it's all out there for anybody that really wants to study it. The thing is, though, see, this is why, you know, when's the last time you guys ever, remember hearing a national politician refer to the Republic? They don't even call it the Republic anymore. Now all they can talk about is democracy, democracy. Got to defend democracy. Well, what's democracy? The most classic example of democracy in action is a lynch mob, right? Majority rules. Okay? Well, that's not what we have. It's not what we want. That's not what we were given by the Founder Fathers. We were given a democratic republic, okay? Now, the thing is, under a democracy, under a democratic republic, you have to adhere to the law. There's laws, and there's a constitution, a Bill of Rights, and you have to adhere to that. Under democracy, it's mob rule. Whatever the majority says, go. And if you want to elect a president who's not even eligible under the constitution, you can do it because majority rules. And that's why all they can talk about is democracy, democracy, and that's how they keep this stuff down. You guys know about this alien technology. I know about it. I probably thousands know about it. But this is a nation of 350 million people. They watch TV. They don't know about it because it's democracy in action. The mass media controls majority. Majority dictates what we're going to believe in.
Yeah. When we talk about Ram Gravionics and Gordon Novell, let's get back to a basic question, and both of you can answer this. Both of you have met him, right?
Yeah.
Was Gordon for real? That's the question. I've known Gordon for a long time.
It depends. For me, it depends on what you mean by real. You know?
Yeah. Well,
he was a real person. I think he really cared. I mean, I've had late night talks with him, you know, and I think he truly cared about what happened to the human race.
I agree with you there.
Can I ask Jim? Because Jim knew, I didn't know him. The only reason I got involved with him was because of this incident in 1988. That involved Frank Carlucci, who was the Secretary of Defense for Reagan. I was interested in that whole thing. And he was National Security Advisor, where they test flew this object at Norton Air Force Base, which you're going to talk about later. But I'd like to ask a question, because my interest was this POTUS briefing that we were talking about, where he puts this thing out and he wants this sort of a movie script done. He's trying to promote it to Steven Spielberg. And in this one interview he does with Alan Steinfeld, he talks about the fact that he has backing from the CIA, and that would be my question. Did he have Ronald Pandolfi's backing from the CIA? Because people would say, no, he didn't, and my experience was I knew Bob Emeniger very well. And Bob Emeniger, as you know, was responsible for this documentary in the 1970s that was authorized by the Pentagon to do this UFO documentary.
Yeah.
And that's all he was really interested in. He really wasn't interested in UFOs. And so one time, this is about 2 years ago, I'm talking to him, and I said to him, well, he brings up the fact that he had a phone call from Ronald Pandolfi, who is the top scientist at CIA, and he's been rumored to be the UFO guy in the CIA. And I said, well, why would you be talking to Ronald Pandolfi? You haven't been involved in UFOs. Why would he phone you? And he said, well, it had to do with Gordon Novell. And he said Gordon Novell had this thing, and they had the diagrams, and he wanted him to do some PR promotion for the RAM program and whatever. And Bob said he wasn't really that interested. He didn't really believe it was for real or whatever, but he was willing to help out. And then Gordon told him, he said, well, in order for you to get on, you have to be vetted by Ronald Pandolfi. And Emminger told me, yeah, Pandolfi actually did phone him. And I said, well, what did he ask? He said, oh, he just asked me a bunch of personal questions and whatever. And then Gordon Novell phones him back and says, well, Pandolfi says you're a go. You can be on the project. So that's my question is not so much, it doesn't really matter to me whether what was in the thing, whether it was for real or whether it was accurate or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The thing was that Gordon Novell was running around with this post-briefing thing that on the front he said it had the White House symbol, it had the CIA symbol, and it had Ronald Pandolfi's name on it, and he said he had their backing to run around the country with this thing and try to promote this thing. So my interest is, if he's being backed by the CIA, if he's being, he said 5 years, I think it was, that Pandolfi backed him and then sort of cut him loose, that if they're backing him, then it doesn't really matter about Ronald Pandolfi. It's who's backing Ronald Pandolfi. They're taking him serious. They're trying to promote this thing for whatever reason. That's mm-hmm. my question. Did he have any sort of official backing from the White House or from the CIA?
Okay. Official backing, I don't know. What I can tell you for absolute sure, though, is that he was in fairly constant communication with Ron Pandolfi, who is who he says he is. We all know that he's legitimate and connected to science, technology, and the CIA. I know when I first heard all that, I had the same question you have, Grant. And so I told Gordon, I said, I want to talk to Ron Pandolfi. Well, I did on several occasions. Plus, I had access to email correspondence. And yes, that was an ongoing thing. Now, was it official? I don't know. And in fact, I kind of doubt it, because I'm the one who tried to tell Gordon early on. I said, I think he kept trying. I was with him on occasions when he'd tell people, I have the support of the CIA. Well, he was in touch with the CIA through Ron Pandolfi and others. And I think he may, in his own mind, have truly believed that he had some kind of official support from him. He seemed to believe that. But I told him and warned him, I said, I think this is a vacuum cleaner operation. I think they're just keeping tabs on you, and they want to know what you know, to find out if you're getting into any secret matters and stuff.
Exactly.
And that seems now to be proven true, because I know towards the end of his life there, he even finally admitted to me that he thought that Pandolfi had kind of turned on him and was not fulfilling promises or things he had said to work on Gordon's behalf. And now, after he's dead, I notice Pandolfi is backing off even further and claiming he's a fraud and yada yada, which is kind of typical CIA methodology. But I guarantee you, for a long, ongoing period of time, Gordon was in constant touch with Ron Pandolfi and was being, shall we say, guided by him. But now, if this was I'm sure Pandolfi would argue that this was not any kind of official connection with the CIA, and that may be true.
Yeah, the CIA is not involved in UFOs, are they?
they would never admit it if they were.
Yeah, I had heard that too from various people in the scientific community, that they were afraid of Pandolfi, because if you're working in the scientific field and you're into UFOs, you always got to watch where you step across that line.
That's
where
right.
You start to touch the classified stuff, and that's the end of your career. You
That's
can,
right.
you know, you all your contracts are gone, and Pandolfi can call you up, or, you know, I think that's part of his job, is to watch the community to see if there's any classified information moving across the line, and those people get stepped on.
Right. And I know that Gordon certainly was of the opinion that he had the secret, okay? Now, you know, you would think that this is what kind of convinces me that they do know it at some level at some point. Because you would think that somebody would go, well, he seems to know what he's talking about. Let's at least try this, or let's build a prototype. And yet, not only did they not do that, but it seemed like they were always throwing stumbling blocks in his way to prevent him from doing that, to include physical threats on his life.
That's true. About Pandolfi, when Gordon passed away, I contacted Ron, and he responded and sent me an email, which I read on this program, when we did a salute to Gordon passing away, a tribute. And I don't think he would have done that, reading between the lines about what he said about Gordon, about basically it was a lot of CIA double talk about right. meeting in a place where kind of a safe zone in a restaurant out of the way. And both of them stepped back into the night to do what they needed to do, and I'm paraphrasing, of course. But the point is, in Pandolfi and his world of the CIA, it seemed to me that that was pretty much a straightforward tribute to a fellow traveler.
Well, let me put it this way, and we'll put you in on this, Jerry. What if you were contacted by somebody who was a fairly ranking CIA official, told you to meet in a public place, you know, in a dark corner, and you sit there and discuss very, very secretive and esoteric type subjects, and he kept telling you what a good job you're doing and blah, 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 and then you went away, would you consider that you were working for the CIA?
Technically, I wouldn't
probably.
Be.
Probably.
Yeah, Gordon, I've often thought that Gordon was being taken advantage of by the CIA.
Yes, I think they were just keeping tabs on him. And see, let me tell you something. This goes all the way back. He's been accused of all kinds of things, including being the umbrella man in the Dealey Plaza in the Kennedy assassination, and that he was working for the CIA, blah, blah, blah. He did work for a double-check firm that apparently was connected to the CIA. And yet, I would continually try to pin him down. Did you ever work for the CIA? And he consistently said no. And I think then the reality is he worked with people with the CIA for years. But was he ever a hired employee? No.
Yeah, that's the same story that Bill Moore told back. You give that example about if you were contacted, and that's what Bill Moore said. I mean, he was contacted by a high level guy inside the CIA, and he went and he took the guy's credentials and the scientific guy that contacted him. They went to the head of news for CBS in Los Angeles, had him vet the credentials of these guys, and Bill Moore had basically said if any researcher worth his salt, if he had been approached like I had by high-ranking government people offering to help and do all this kind of stuff, anybody would take that opportunity to jump in there. And yeah. So that's why it's so significant to me with Ronald Pandolfi, because a lot of people will say that Ronald Pandolfi, he had this incident in 96 where with the Chinese situation where it got called up in front of Congress, and some people have said after that, his elevator really didn't go to the top floor anymore. And I disagree. I think this is a very high-level guy. He was moved up in about 2008, 2009 to the National Intelligence Office, which is above the CIA. It works directly for the president. If you're not really with it, and you're not going to get elevated. So he was at the top pinnacle of the intelligence world, just outside the White House. And to have this guy involved, with Novell indicates that, you know, there is interest there, and I'm always interested because before him, it's a whole chain of people. It's Ronald Pandolfi from 83 on. Before that, it was Kit Green. Before that, it was Arthur Lundahl. There's a whole group of these high-level CIA people who have interacted with the UFO community since at least 1954.
And they interacted with Gordon Novell.
Yes. And I think that's significant. That's what my interest in the Gordon Novell thing. And a lot of people say, well, Gordon Novell was this, Gordon Novell was that. It's irrelevant what Gordon Novell was. It was if these people are dealing with him, then there's something to be looking at instead of
that's
trying
right.
to. Because a lot of people, when this FOTUS thing came out, said, oh, this is a hoax government document. I'm going like, where did you get government document? Nobody, Gordon and I didn't say, nobody said it was a government document. Everybody just basically said it was something that, that had been written, and I mentioned that you had helped write this thing, and Dolan had written this thing. It wasn't a government document. It was just something that Gordon was in charge of. Gordon was trying to get this thing promoted, and it sort of turned into this sort of conspiracy of, you know, this hoax government document, and but I think with these high-level government people being involved, and I heard lots of names associated with the RAM thing that, you know, high-level people that, that Gordon had interested people in this program that he was working on.
Well, I'm looking at the cover here, and let's just read it. It says, prepared for the Central Intelligence Agency. Prepared for, not prepared from or by.
Yeah.
Okay, POTUS briefing. And then it's got a seal that says Officer Director of the National Intelligence. All right, well, he put Ron Pandolfi's office seal on there. Eyes only, classification Umbra 32, whatever the heck that means. I think that was Gordon's. I don't know if it's a real designation or Gordon's. And then it says U.S. Government Liaison Control Officer, Dr. Ronald Pandolfi, and Production Control Executive, Gordon Ovell. And then it lists an executive producer who was a guy who told him he could get a movie deal going, and that's all it is. Why would anybody think that's a government document?
Yeah, exactly.
It kind of looks like one, but then again, that was Gordon's idea. If you are going to present, say, to the Defense Department a plan for, say, a new jet fighter or whatever, are you going to write it out on a yellow pad? No, you're going to type something up, and you're going to have little classification stuff on it. You're going to make it look real government-ese and
sure.
You know, bureaucraties and have all the stuff. That was his idea. I didn't necessarily agree with that. If you're going to say something, just say it. But he had been at it a long time, and he wanted to present the thing as if it was a very official type presentation. And so, okay, doesn't mean it's a government document.
Well,
yeah.
one of the reasons we're even talking about this tonight, if we go back to the man Gordon Novell, is he had lots of stories over the years. And you could verify some of them. Some of them had a little bit of truth in them. It was hard to tell exactly what was happening. And I think, A, he probably did that on purpose.
Yeah.
And B, he was a kind of guy who liked to be the center of attention.
Yeah.
Jim, you can't take this away from Gordon Ovell. Nobody can. He did have an ethic about wanting this free energy to be developed.
I think he was really, really serious about that. You also have to understand that he, although had technical training, was an electronics expert years ago, but then electronics changes every few months, so I don't know how up he was on everything, but he did have a reputation for being an electronics expert, but he never claimed to be a scientist. He never claimed to be a journalist. He never claimed to be a politician. Okay, he was an entrepreneur. He got his start as a young man in New Orleans by creating and setting up a World's Fair or something like that. He was quite proud of that, and he was hustling and trying to do projects ever since. Okay, so being an entrepreneur is not necessarily a bad thing, but to be an entrepreneur, you got to wheel and deal, and you got to deal in the business world. Worse yet, you got to deal in the government world. And in those worlds, you don't go in with your hat in your hand and go, well, I'm not been very successful, but I was hoping you'd look at my latest project. No, man, you go in, you know, tie on, chest out. Hey, I've got something you need, you know.
Right.
You do the super salesman job on them. And that's what he was doing. And once you understand that, I don't see what the problem is.
And of course, some of the paradoxes about Gordon Ovell is, you know, he kind of never really shut down the JFK assassination relationship. In other words, he let people believe he might be the umbrella man, even though he denied it. But he was kind of a wink and a grin, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And Gordon, I believe I'm right about this. Grant, didn't he tell you at one time he shot a gun at Kennedy or something?
No, I didn't tell me that, no.
No, he didn't. Okay.
No, that does not sound like him. I don't think he
okay, some a third party was telling me that.
Yeah, there's lots of stories about him, but
well,
I mean, you know, I yield to no one when it comes to knowledge of the Kennedy assassination, and I leaned on him numerous times, and he consistently said he was at in Two Shores in New York and not in Dealey Plaza.
Yeah.
And, guys, I'll say this. To me, the proof that he was not directly connected to the Kennedy assassination is the sheer fact that he lived so long. If he'd been involved, believe me, he wouldn't have been around in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s.
Well, I hope, like Jim, I hope maybe you can do some sort of book on him or something, to, because it's kind of bad the way he's sort of going down in flames here after he died. That because I know, like John Lear, I know John Lear fairly well. They're doing a movie on his life. He had a kind of a life like Novell. I think it'd be interesting to have someone sort of who knew him fairly well to write up his story, because he had a lot of interesting stories. So he was an interesting guy.
Yeah, that's absolutely for true. And the thing is, you could almost tell the underground history of the 20th century through Gordon Novell's eyes, because he was, Jim Garrison did try to extradite him from to New Orleans for the Clay Shaw trial and tried to tie him into the Kennedy assassination. And then in Watergate, of course, he was approached and was tried to get him to build a degaussing gun that would erase the 18-minute tape, and then he was mixed up with the John DeLorean, and then he also was in with Ramsey Clark's investigation of the Waco debacle, and yeah, so you can almost track all of the great conspiracies of the 20th century somehow tangentially involve Gordon Novell.
Yeah,
you got a good point about that. I want to talk a little bit about the idea of making a movie to reveal this.
Okay, let me quickly say this. I don't know how our time's running. I think we're about to run out here, but let me just say this. After trying to contact the, I don't know what you ever want to call them, the movers, shakers, the New World Order, Henry Kissinger, Brzezinski, he tried to write to President Obama, trying to go to these people and say, we know, this technology, we need to get it out to the public, and he was getting nowhere. Then his next thought was, if he could produce a major grade A Hollywood blockbuster, it would bring the issue to the public and possibly force their hand into releasing some of this technology. That's why it was only after he failed to make any impact on the secret holders that he decided to go the Hollywood route.
Yeah.
Jim, we're going to hang around here and talk a little bit about it. You're welcome to hang on, too, as well.
I can hang on for a little while.
Okay, fine. I'm going to take a break, and we're going to bring in Mark McCandish here in a minute, who actually was part of the Secret RAM Group, an aerospace designer, did a lot of things along that line. Maybe get a picture of exactly what they were trying to develop. And there's lots of other things we need to cover as well. And Grant, I hope you can hang in too.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back, and we'll bring in Mark and continue talking with Grant and Jim for a while. I'm Jerry Pippin. Don't go away. You know, when we pause for a commercial, it's always for somebody who pays the freight, pays the way. Well, I'm going to take time out to talk about somebody who can't pay their way. And that's the stray animals, dogs and cats and other animals, who need your help. And there is a way to help them. Support no-kill animal shelters. It's a gift of life that keeps on giving. These animal shelters are located around the world and maybe in your neighborhood. Animals, they need love. They don't need to be sent someplace and then executed just because they don't have a home. Support the animal shelter that is a no-kill shelter near you. Give them a donation of $10, $25, $50 or more. The money will be well used. The animals will love you for it. So give a gift of love, a gift of life, to that stray dog or cat.